So let's begin with the first speaker. As I mentioned, the association will be talking about an overview of what this topic is all about and providing some background and context for us. The speaker is Mark Wolf. Mark is the Executive Director of the National Energy Assistance Directors Association, which represents the state directors of the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP. He's a leading expert on energy affordability and has testified before Congress and been featured on a PBS special even about this topic. He also has helped to lead a national effort to develop the Warehouse for Energy Efficiency Loans, or WEEL, which is designed to help families of all incomes access low-cost financing to retrofit their homes to make them more efficient. It's your turn, Mark. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me today. This is definitely a very important topic. When we talk about the problem, what is the problem in terms of energy affordability? For those of you who haven't really worked directly on programs like LIHEAP, a lot of this is definitional. You know, what is low income? We've used the eligibility criteria for the LIHEAP program, which is 150% of the federal poverty level or 60% of state median income, whichever is greater. So it goes up to, you know, the very, very poor as well as working families. That works out to about one out of three households in the United States. So I think in terms of thinking about how many families need help, these are families that struggle to pay their energy bills. They live paycheck to paycheck, or they live on fixed incomes. They just don't have a lot of money. And I think that when we think about the low-income population, often people think it's much smaller than it really is. Sometimes people talk about 100% of poverty, which is about $20,000 for a family of four. That's maybe about 12-13% of the population, but that's a very, very narrow base. When thinking about energy affordability, how important is it? A typical low-income family spends about four times their share of income than a middle-income family would spend on home energy. And now some of that's intuitive. They just have less money, but the amount of energy used by a household does not increase proportionally to income. Every family has a refrigerator. Every family has a heating and cooling system. So at the end of the day, a low-income family uses almost as much energy as a better off as a typical middle-class family, but they have much less income to use to pay for that. Also thinking about, you know, what a low-income family's residences look like. About half of them are renters and the other half are homeowners. Many of the homeowners are elderly, living on fixed income now. Maybe they made more money earlier, but now they're living on Social Security. And as a family gets older, the likelihood that Social Security will be their primary source of income becomes more and more dominant. The other thing here that's important when thinking about home energy is that it's variable based on the price of energy. Energy can be very, very volatile in its pricing. Just look at heating oil and gasoline. Recently, the cost of heating oil has dropped by almost 50%, but that could turn around pretty quickly based on forces outside of U.S. control. You know, you can have issues in the Middle East and others. So for families, this is both a very important part of their expenditure, and it's a volatile part, which is why I think the government has provided resources to help those families. The other thing that's important here is that the poorest families suffer from high rates for regulated fuels like electricity and natural gas, high rates of arrearages and shutoffs, especially during the winter. You also find that to some extent with those using heating oil and propane when they can get credit or have some time to pay the bill as well with their vendor. And that is a big, big problem. And arrearages and shutoffs increase, not surprisingly, when the price goes up or the economy tanks. You start seeing more people falling behind on their energy bills. It's also a problem for the utilities. And one thing I think that people don't, again, is not commonly thought about is that utility service territories do not have all this. Utility service territories don't serve the same proportion of low-income households. So some utilities have a much higher share of low-income households than others. And for those utilities, this is a special problem. You know, how do you keep people connected? How do you provide sufficient incentives to make the bill affordable when you're working with a smaller rate base. So a utility, a good example, I think, is there are two utilities in Connecticut. One represents, I think, about 75% of the residential rate base, but has about 25% of the poverty in the state. The other is exactly the opposite. So the one that has the larger rate base and the smaller percent of poverty often has more flexibility in addressing the problem, say the one that has a smaller share of the rate base and a higher percentage of the low-income population. I'd like to switch to talking about solutions. What are the kinds of strategies that state energy officials have developed? And the LIHEAP directors, the low-income home energy assistance program directors in the state, really are the point person for state and federally sponsored energy assistance. So they often do the state plan. They come up with programs. They work closely with their public service commissioners, and the utilities just think through what are the supplemental type of assistance that can be provided. So the kinds of things that are the kind of tools that we have, first it's bill payment assistance. Sometimes that involves a discount, like you'll see a 20% off for low-income families. Sometimes it'll be a direct add-on or a direct supplement to the LIHEAP benefit. So those are kind of the two basic strategies that we use. And then there's a third one, which some states have tried. It's called the PIP program, or Percent of Income Payment Program. That really is kind of the gold standard. So what a state will say is no family will spend more than, say, 7 or 8% of their income on home energy. So essentially it's capped. So a family knows how much their energy bill is going to be, regardless, or at least the ceiling on what it can be, regardless of what the weather conditions are or price conditions. So as before, I was saying price plays a big role in terms of how much a family will spend. It's also weather. So there are a number of sort of determining factors that make the energy bill very, very difficult for a family. It's often not the same thing as, say, you can substitute and say, it's an old example, instead of eating meat, you can eat chicken, you can eat rice, you can eat beans. Here, you have to heat your home. It's a public health issue. You can't turn the heat down too low, because what can happen then is certain medicines won't work as well. You can get hypothermia. There are lots and lots of issues that occur if a home is not heated appropriately or cooled appropriately in the summer. The other strategy we have to help with the bill, of course, is reducing the need. The lower the bill, the lower the cost. The cost for energy. So weatherization is the companion program to LIHEAP, and that program helps families reduce their bill through basic weatherization measures. I'll talk about that shortly. And so those two programs together, the strategy is to help families lower their cost of energy and also make it affordable. You'll never make it totally affordable for many families who just don't have the money to pay the bill, but you can always make it more affordable. And where the PIP program works really well is essentially saying, okay, if there's an apartment building with 100 families, they're all low income, they're all eligible for the PIP program, and that last year the bill for home energy was $100,000, but it's capped on the program at $50,000. So the state or the utility is responsible for the difference, but if you can then weatherize that building, instead of being responsible for $50,000, maybe only responsible for $20,000. So you can see how integrating program services can make an enormous difference, both in terms of helping families as well as increasing overall affordability for both the state and the utility sectors. Then moving on to what are the kinds of problems that we find in these buildings? That's the other thing. When thinking about what drives up the cost of home energy, one is we'll find inefficient and poorly maintained heating and cooling systems. Sometimes a state will replace the heating system, but the family just doesn't have the money to maintain it. So sometimes we'll actually pay for annual maintenance, because that also weakens the effectiveness of the system and also shortens its lifespan. When doing weatherization, there's a secondary problem of, we're also going to a home of a low-income family or a poorly maintained multifamily building, and you have a series of problems. If you want to put an insulation, if the roof is leaking, you can't put an insulation. So you have to address that. You also can have inefficient lighting, air sealing, and other air infiltration issues. And the other problem that also concerns us with energy efficiency is the relationship between energy and public health. There we're seeing there's more and more interest across states in terms of it's not just the energy envelope, but what about things like water infiltration? You know, there's a leaky roof problem, but what about if it's creating mold? It can create asthma triggers for especially for young children. That's been well documented. We'll also go in and either install or replace faulty smoke and carbon monoxide detectors. Very, very basic things to make the home safer. But the key here is we look at energy-related measures. You know, we're not a housing program. In a sense, we are, I guess, but we're really a housing program focused on the energy envelope. We don't do lead abatement, although we'll do lead safe improvements. But we don't have the kind of resources to totally renovate the home. I'd like to talk about the funding streams. You know, where does somebody come from and how much we have to work with? LAHEAP is the main program. There's about $3.4 billion that was appropriated for this year. It's down from a couple of years ago. We had $5 billion. There's about about 7 million households receiving assistance. So it's a large, large program, and it's the main source of help with energy affordability. The average household benefits about $400, so it's not a large benefit. Thinking just in terms of the winter heating bill, which is often our target, the winter heating bill on average costs the typical family about $1,000. So on average, we're helping with about 40% of that bill. But states will target those funds often on the poorest households and will do larger benefits. So in some of the cold weather states, we'll see benefits as high as $1,000. Mostly, especially for families that have delivered fuels because the vendor has to be paid. Where on regulated fuels, we'll often do utility shutoff prevention measures, so a utility can't shut off a family during the winter. It's another way of helping a family. As I said before, the eligibility is 150% of the federal poverty guideline or 60% of state median. And states have flexibility there. So you can't go below 110% of poverty, but you can go pretty high in the income scale. And a lot, again, depends on how much other resources the state has so they can reach as many households as possible. The administration of LAHEAP, as well as the Weatherization Assistance Program, often goes to local community action agencies. They're really our local partners in terms of bringing families into the program. And the other thing that happens, that really is, I think, we see it as a gateway program in many places. So a family comes in, they apply for LAHEAP. We see if they're eligible for weatherization, but we also see if they're eligible for other programs as well. So it's really a way to help strengthen the family so they can both pay their energy bill but also deal with other related problems. The Weatherization Assistance Program, we transfer some of our money into WAP, or about $406 million. But the thing to keep in mind there is that the cost to weatherize a home is far more than the cost to help a family pay their home energy bill. So the average household benefit under the weatherization program is about $6,000. So very quickly you can see that, you know, WAP can maybe serve about 100,000 households. That's a small fraction of the eligible population. One of the overall problems we have is that we just don't have enough money. You know, we know that we can reach far more people. We only reach about 20% of the eligible families for LAHEAP and maybe about 1% for weatherization. So while these can be very effective programs, one of the big problems is just lack of resources. Supplemental programs, and that's really where we get to other funding streams, and also how to integrate resources. There are 30 states in D.C. that have supplemental programs, and that's pretty much utility programs. Utilities, and usually it's the Public Service Commission that gives the order to do this, but they're the ones that do discount programs. They're the ones that will provide supplemental money for LAHEAP and WAP, and it's close to $4 billion now. So it almost matches the total amount of federal money. So together we have about close to $7 to $8 billion to work with every year. And while it sounds like a lot, it's still only enough to reach about 20% of the eligible population. We're not like food stamps or SNAP, where I think they have a $70 billion program. So I think that's the issue to sort of look at. The other piece that's important here, too, is that we've been looking at, because we're a state-sponsored organization, we've been looking also at, you know, where is the role for supplemental financing. There are a number of states that now offer low-interest loans through the Warehouse for Energy Efficiency Loan Programs, Pennsylvania, New York, Florida is about to start, and a number of other states, with the idea to say, look, that for families that are lower income, the weatherization grant might not be sufficient or might not be available. A low-interest loan at least helps the family make needed improvements, and it's far better than a credit card loan. Then I go on, what are the characteristics of an integrated program? And I think that my colleagues will be talking about real examples of this. The first one, of course, is sign-up and eligibility determination for assistance is at one location. You know, there are all stories about being sent around town. Here is one where if you can sign up the family at the same time, you can help them and also reduce overhead costs. New York's a good example where you can't get utility assistance till you signed up for LIHEAP. So you have to sign up for both of them at the same time, and that, again, really makes a difference. You know, having one application or a PIP-type program with weatherization, again, it's a systematic way to bring resources together for a family at one stop. The other piece that, you know, sounds like it shouldn't be that difficult, but it really does present major challenges for low-income administering agencies is sometimes, you know, states use different income eligibility terms and standards across programs, not realizing that it creates an enormous amount of brain damage for local agencies that have to figure out, you've got 150% of poverty in this program, you've got state median income in that program. So the more you can standardize those terms, the easier it is. Then the other piece, and I know this also is a challenge, the integration of LIHEAP and weatherization federal utility funds. Sometimes they use different eligibility standards again. Sometimes utility program will use their evaluation criteria. Weatherization has its own evaluation criteria. Again, it might look fairly straightforward at 5,000 feet above the sky, but for the local administrator, that can really create a lot of heartburn. And lastly, barriers to integration, essentially the flip side of what I just said, when you have separate sign-up locations for each program, separate procedures for discount programs, different eligibility standards, that just makes things very complicated, but they're all addressable. And I think that what you'll hear from the other speakers is that you can address these well and really make a difference for families. So that concludes my presentation. I'd be glad to, if you have any questions, just certainly shoot them to me. And thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate your presentation because it gave me a good sense of the overall issue and the context in which it is sitting, and then also, therefore, how important it is for programs to align and leverage each other so that they can be more successful for this challenging problem. Before we go on to the next speaker, we wanted to do a little bit of audience participation by doing a poll question. And what you'll do is it's a multiple choice, and you can select the best answer right there, and then we'll show the results. The question is, why is your agency or organization primarily interested in energy programs for low-income households? Is it because you want to reduce energy costs and address poverty? Do you want to improve health and safety? Do you want to reduce pollution? Do you want to improve housing and promote community development? Or to access the Clean Power Plan CEIP? Please enter your choice now. Okay, Wendy, can you pull up the results? Great. Wow, exactly half want to do the first thing, and that doesn't surprise me. But the other reasons, reducing pollution is another high one, which I would have expected. Not so much on improving health and safety. Hopefully, this webcast might show you how that can be easier done more easily. And then improving housing and accessing the Clean Power Plan. Thank you for your answers. We want to do one more just quickly. These answers, I think, help us in our deciding on products to produce, but also it helps you understand each other that are on the line. The next one, which of the following programs is your agency or organization currently implementing? You can select more than one. Bill assistance, weatherization and energy efficiency, education and behavior change, policy advocacy, or none of the above. Please enter your choices now. Okay, let's see the results, please. Oh, wow, we have three that are kind of neck and neck, weatherization, education, behavior change, and policy advocacy, also bill assistance. So for those folks that are currently, it looks like maybe the last category, folks haven't implemented programs yet, and we hope by the end of the webcast you will be motivated to do that. So congratulations to the rest of you for your efforts in all those areas.